The TNT Shop has great gift ideas for your furry family member at TNTRadio.live. Patrick Henningsen talks on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, ladies and gentlemen. All right. Welcome to TNT. Today's News Talk, the Patrick Henningsen Show, broadcasting live globally today, wherever you are in the world. Welcome, welcome. And we thank you for choosing to spend the next 2 hours with us talking geopolitics, talking politics, scandals, high crimes and misdemeanors. We'll be joined in the first hour by French journalist, researcher, independent French journalist Freddy Ponton, going to be joining us from within the EU zone to give us a little update on a story he's working on. We touched base on this in the previous program on Friday and also on Monday, and Freddy is proceeding with his work on this. It's getting more interesting by the day. Plus, we have a recent statement by Pfizer CEO Albert Bourla that is certain to upset a lot of people out there, certainly people who are concerned about the recklessness of the vaccine rollout globally, and the fallout from that is just immense. So we'll talk about that and more with Freddy as well. And also in the second hour, we're very pleased to be joined by a special guest later in the second hour. His name is Dr. Piers Robinson. He is an academic, but more importantly, a renowned author and researcher on the subject of propaganda and, of course, censorship. He's no stranger to this issue as well. We'll talk about that in the banning of New Dawn magazine, among other things, the banning in New Zealand of New Dawn from the shelves, from the newsagents and bookstores there. We'll talk about all that with Piers. That's going to be a fascinating discussion. But, you know, in studio today, I just want to remind people, hello, we're joined shotgun with Mr. Basil Valentine in studio. Hello, Basil.
Good afternoon, Patrick. Good to be with you. Hello, everyone.
So nice of you to join us and to host us for this broadcast.
Pleasure.
In your studio. So the Valentine Towers special.
That's right.
Totally soundproofed and ready for action. So Basil, I'm going to start off with something I was just to share with you my experience last night. There's this thing called Twitter Spaces. And I think it's like Clubhouse merged with Twitter. So Elon Musk has launched this, and kind of it's very functional. It works really well. Where some people host a discussion, you jump in the room, you can listen, request to talk. So I jumped in one last night called Ukraine Facts and BS. And some of the leading, quote, thought leaders are there. You're talking about people in the kind of Twitter sphere, Michael Tracy, Aaron Maté, and then a whole bunch of blowhards, quote, military experts, American and a couple of Ukrainians as well. And so it sounded like a NATO talking shop for the first hour. I couldn't take much more. Had to get in a cab and meet up with you later, but that night. But after the show, I jumped back in, and it was pretty... It got better, but I mean, you're talking about a 5 or 6 hour discussion.
Wow.
Roundtable discussion.
Wow.
So it was kind of all over the place. But the one thing that struck me on this is that so many people are just living in a delusional world, especially those in America or that are watching, constantly consuming American or European propaganda. They think that Ukraine is some bastion of democracy. And they're just on the verge of knocking the Russians out cold, you know, third round knockout type thing. And that NATO could just steamroll Russia. And Russia's going to be basically, you know, with its tail between its legs by the spring. And they believe all this. And that Putin is this sort of bloodthirsty butcher, the reincarnation of Hitler, etc. And I don't know what it is about Americans or people that are in that bubble. It's such a relentless propaganda bubble there. You've been to visit, you start turning on the TV and you hear all the noise and then they hit you with the radio. I mean, you think your view of the world can be distorted very easily if you're not grounded. And I just felt like that's a lot. Even the people who I would agree with, they also have blinkers on this. And Because in America, the pressure is so great not to appear to favor Russia that they're scared of being called pro-Putin. So they're all trying to basically do these pirouettes along this tightrope in the commentary. It's just language and speech has been so corrupted. I think intellectually, COVID, the vaccine, Ukraine, the things people are saying are outrageous. They're not really concerned about the threat of a nuclear war. Everyone's so cavalier and slapdash. Have you noticed this?
You're not kidding, Patrick. Yeah. The overall standard of conversation is extremely low, very low intelligence, low levels of awareness demonstrated, very little genuine insight, and very little appetite for the truth. People are much more comfortable with the falsehoods that they're told on the radio and television every night. It's not just in America. I think Britain is in lockstep with the United States when it comes to the Ukraine propaganda. Boris Johnson, of course, now wanting to become appointed the special envoy to Ukraine and calling for Ukraine to join NATO immediately, which would, of course, to all intents and purposes, mean World War III. I mean, it's absolutely insane what's going on. It's, you know, the protocols and diplomatic structure that sort of held the world together for the post-war period, the consensus and balance of power that held from 45 through to the Reagan-Gorbachev era, and then in a modified form with the Russians weakened after the collapse of the Soviet Union, but by no means destroyed. That's all been thrown out of the window, you know. It seems like the diplomatic channels are not operating in the way that they were. When Henry Kissinger is the voice of reason calling for peace, then you know you're in a dark place. I'm surprised, though, about your discussion last night that if Michael Tracy and Aaron Maté weren't talking some sense.
They were talking sense, but they weren't talking enough sense because everyone's trying to be polite to each other because it's like elite left-wing Twitter. And people were talking such nonsense. I mean, literally making up history, saying that Russia attacked Georgia first in 2008, and all they're basically rehashing all the propaganda lines that are, you know, the CNN world sort of history wiki, the CNN wiki,
yeah,
of history. They're just all repeating the same stuff.
Yeah.
Then a Ukrainian goes in there and saying that there's no Nazis in Ukraine, and you people in the West don't know I am from Ukraine, and you're talking rubbish, and da da da, and. Yeah, so you've the moderators are kind of afraid to challenge the Ukrainian because they're from there, and it gives them special status in the debate.
Of course.
It's like the whole thing is just, I mean, you can't have an objective analytical conversation, but I find it hilarious and almost laughable that all of these experts, they don't mention Britain at all. And we both know that the Anglo-American arrangement, the Anglo-American team, l'équipe anglaise, okay?
Yes.
Britain's the brains, America's the muscle.
Yes.
But so few, yes, Americans can comprehend this, and they just gloss over it. Why do you think Boris is running over there? He's putting the pressure on because the Congress is wavering, the new GOP Congress, they're wavering.
I think it suits the Western axis for Britain to appear to be much weaker than it used to be. Of course, up until 1945, Britain was a preeminent world power with the empire. And when you think after the Second World War, the three big chiefs who sat down were Stalin, Roosevelt and Truman and Churchill. You know, Britain was up alongside the Russians and the Americans as the third major power in the world. And I think it suits, as I say, the controllers for Britain to appear to be weaker than it is. But power-wise, we don't know exactly what goes on with respect to shadow government decision-making and all the rest of it, but London still plays a key role. I've got a meme here I want to quote from Twitter yesterday. What is it about Ukraine that makes people who have never given a rude word, before about other nations being invaded feel as concerned as they do? To which I replied, in a word, propaganda. And it is, it's the, you know, it's the old Chomsky manufacturing consent. You know, it's the synthesis of outrage, except in this case, as you say, it's extremely dangerous. There is a very, very grave threat of nuclear war, particularly with Poland, now Germany, wanting to send tanks in. Everybody talking about escalation, our own Ministry of Defense now training Ukrainians in the use of missiles. And so it goes on. It's reckless and very stupid indeed.
It is. It is. Well, look, we'll break down some of this more, and maybe we'll talk about some of this with Freddie, certainly on the French NATO end. But in the second hour, we might pick up this thread again, because there's more. There's a huge corruption scandal that in Ukraine. Ukraine, it's so bad. I mean, this is such a corrupt cesspool. Ukraine, generally in a normal non-war year, they're actually sacking people. They're cleaning house for some epic graft that's been uncovered in Ukraine. They're pilfering all the aid money, luxury cars, luxury villas, holidays, and you name it, embezzlement, bribery, the whole lot. So
plus organ harvesting, child trafficking, you know, human, all the dark arts.
Yep. All that human trafficking, etc. Yeah, it's a mess. It's a mess. And the image that Americans and even Ukrainians who are settled in the West like to portray it as whiter than white, and this fragile fledgling democracy that just needs a little bit of a push from the West, just a couple, maybe 500 billion or a trillion, just a little nudge to help us out of this rough patch and put Putin away, you know, with some money and a few weapons and just a bit more. This is a recipe for disaster. Well, we'll talk about this and more. I'm with Basil Valentine in studio. Listening to TNT, Today's News Talk. We'll be right back after these messages.
Greg Mabry on TNT Radio.
It's often been said that power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. If that's the case, then such corruption would seem most evident when man surrenders so easily to his most depraved and sadistic and absolutely perverted impulses. Now, in considering the extent of the global pedophilia pandemic and child physical and sexual abuse and related criminal activity indulged in by our power elites, one thing is certainly clear: the deep-seated depravity and moral turpitude and studied indifference to human suffering that's manifested by these people. Such crimes themselves are rendered even more shameful by the degree to which their accomplices at the highest levels within and across the political, social and economic spheres so frequently protect these perps from exposure and therefore prosecution is perhaps the biggest blot on the landscape of civilized society and the most savage indictment on our modern humanity.
The No-Fly Zone with Greg Mabry on TNT Radio. A better business tip from TNT Radio. The benefits of advertising on Today's News Talk, TNT Radio, should be clear to businesses of any shape or size. It can be accessed anywhere, anytime, by anybody, and is the perfect way to build brand awareness and stimulate digital activity. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live. Patrick Henningsen talks on Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, welcome back. Welcome back. We're into the first hour here, and before the break, we're kind of breaking down this whole Ukraine debacle. It's really going from bad to worse, not just for Ukraine, but for the West as well. There is a real risk of a nuclear standoff between the U.S. and Russia. Not an exaggeration. And I think a lot of people are overlooking this, just listening to the rhetoric. There's no one's backing down. They're saying, keep going. Let's escalate. Let's escalate. I think this is hugely problematic. We've got on the line right now, independent French journalist, researcher, Freddie Ponton, who joined us earlier this week and had a great discussion with Freddie in studio on his end in Europe. And I think we've got him on the line right now. Hello, Freddie. How you doing?
Hi, Patrick. Good to be here.
It's great to have you back, Freddie. And what are your thoughts on? I know we've got to We're going to break down some of your work, the research on a very important subject that you're covering, and it's a continuation of our previous discussion, and we'll get to that. But just before we do that, Freddie, what's your general feelings on where this whole Ukraine proxy war situation is? You're in a NATO country, a major NATO country. You're in a nuclear power as well. What's your feelings on this? What's France's feelings on where this conflict is at? What do you think?
Well, the views in France, and as a French citizens, obviously, they're very kind of shared. You know, we have different views. Obviously, some people felt like they should be investing more into Ukraine. So this is the Emmanuel Macron's clan. You know, this is the this far left, which basically pushing this agenda towards supporting at any cost the war efforts in Ukraine, so that there's nothing you can do. There's nothing that's going to change on that side of the curtain. Now, there's obviously a huge slice of the population in France that really have kind of realized the scam behind this entire program. Not everybody is fluent in geopolitics, as you can imagine, but they feel that something is really not right. Just on the back of COVID-19, we're plunging into this this big crisis in Ukraine, investing weapons, money, humanitarian heads. We have people on the ground. Are we actually co-belligerents, and how far and how dangerous it is for our country to get involved further into this conflict? So that's where we stand now. And every day, as you know, there are stories that comes out, whether it's about the weapons that we are sending to Ukraine's end up in Nigeria, in Africa. You know, it's every day of stories. And then obviously the comments and the rhetorics coming out of the European Commissions that are obviously of great concern, Patrick.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, right now this corruption scandal is broken. It's kind of clear now that a lot of the money's been wasted. You know, weapons are being sold on the black market. You know, we had Arnaud Devalet, the international lawyer, he's French as well, exposing some of that a couple of weeks ago. Wrote a good piece at 21st Century Wire. All the Western weapons ending up on the dark net for sale. All of the, you know, the anti-Caesar missiles from France, javelins, Kalashnikovs, guns, M16s, whatever NATO issued weapons, all like for sale in the dark web. So, I mean, the level of corruption there is like beyond anything that I think people in the West can comprehend. But people, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I think what's really important for people to understand it, it's not something that we're not aware of. You know, this is something that our intelligence services, our militaries, and especially the US and the NATO forces knew about Ukraine. It's an extremely corrupted country, and it has obviously all this access to underground black market, if you will, where especially with regards to trafficking, whether it's guns, whether it's people, whether it's drugs. I mean, it's known to be Eurasia, and that's the center platform, you know, for moving things around. So it was known before Russian basically started their special operations. But at the end of the day, it shouldn't come at any surprise that when something of such value, whether it's strategic of money value, hits the ground in Ukraine, it's some of it, probably around 50 to 70%, will find its way into these current black market channels, you know, in Africa, the south part of Sahel, Niger, Chad. All these places are, you know, key areas where weapons is on demand, and I'm sure some of the Ukrainian authorities and perhaps within the militaries have that kind of connections with the obviously the underworld to get these weapons where they need to go. So there's a great business opportunity there, and I think they're taking full advantage of it.
What are your thoughts on this, what Freddie said here?
Well, I just want to bring us up to date with developments this afternoon. The new German Chancellor, Olaf Scholz, has confirmed that it will be making 14 Leopard 2A6 tanks available for Ukraine's war effort and has given partner countries permission to re-export further battle tanks to Kiev. these German tanks, of course, are emblazoned with the Balkenkreuz, the straight arm cross first introduced in 1916 to 1918 and an emblem of the Wehrmacht. So we are going to have Wehrmacht marked German tanks fighting very close, well, exactly where they were fighting in 1942-43 against the Russians. I mean, do people learn nothing from history? The Germans have gone out of their way, as have the Russians since the Second World War, to maintain good diplomatic relations between the two countries, something that the Americans have been very keen to undermine for a long time. But of course, the very painful lessons of World War II have until recently been very fresh in the memory of both the Germans and the Russians.
So the Germans sending panzers into the Ukraine.
Well, leopards, you know,
we'll call them
a derivative,
panzers,
you know.
Against the Russians. Yeah, I think we've been there before, haven't we?
Marked with the Balkenkreuz, with the straight-armed cross of the German military.
Absolutely. You know,
just the same.
Boss, that's Hugo Boss. That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Really?
So,
wow.
You know, the Russians, though, people seem to forget, they don't tend to make a habit of losing wars. They make a habit of winning them. Admittedly, Afghanistan was a bit of a graveyard for them. But then again, Afghanistan has been a graveyard for every invading army since the British in the early 19th century.
Yeah.
You know, Afghanistan is unconquerable. But obviously, Napoleon was, I mean, effectively ended by his lunatic invasion of Russia. And of course, it's been the end of Adolf Hitler as well. So, you know, the Russians are enormously resourceful when it comes to winning wars. And the idea that they're going to be knocked out of eastern Ukraine easily.
Or Crimea. Yeah.
Exactly. Is a total fantasy.
It's delusional.
Extremely delusional.
Yeah. And they're willing to pay a high price to win. And they've proven that in history as well. So they're not.
Exactly.
Yeah. They're not for the faint-hearted when Russia digs its heels in. You know, if you're not willing to go all the way, you better be sure they are. And that's I don't think the West, Western Europe. Look at Europe, Freddie. I don't mean to be down on Europe, but you know, or the U.S. for that matter. But none of these people have ever fought a proper war in decades. You know, where you have major militaries facing off against major militaries. So much so, they almost seem like they're very shy to do it in this case, but they're quite happy to dump, to turn Ukraine into a scrap metal heap full of Leopards and Abrams tanks and whatnot, but have Ukraine do all the fighting and take all the losses for them. That's really what I feel like is going on here.
Well, that's why Boris Johnson wants NATO involved as soon as possible so that other countries' troops are on the ground, because Ukraine are running out of men. People are being press ganged, aren't they? They're being dragged out of their homes and forced to fight, as far as I know.
60-year-old men. And how long till the 16-year-olds get dragged out of their mother's house? Freddie, what do you think about this on that side? Do you think the people in a country like France would accept Macron announcing that he's deploying, 20,000 troops into Ukraine to fight the Russians?
Well, France has never had a great reputation about fighting war and winning them, so I'm not sure about you know, those that voted for Macron will suddenly become patriotic and decide to go and fight a war. You know, in a country that is not even an EU country and not even a NATO member. So nothing is making sense, if you will. We're living in an era of proxy wars, you know. So the NATO, Europe, has been placed as the proxy for the United States conducting their operations against Russia using these NATO forces. And I think that the public, whether it's in France and Germany or in Holland, doesn't matter. We are so removed from the decision process as far as deciding whether we're going to be an official co-belligerent in this war or not. And we can see all the decisions. You know, UK has already announced the delivery of the tanks, the Challenger 2, and so on. So it's really everywhere. It's the same cabal. It's the same people that are basically coming to a common agreement to go and fight a war that they literally cannot win. I mean, it's quite clear that any person that has an understanding of military capabilities and military awareness, especially during the winter era, part of the year in this part of the world, certainly the Russians have a huge advantage. And let's face it, when these actually forces are going to meet face to face, you know, they're still far from each other, you know, on many crucial points of this war. But when they're going to be face to face, I think nobody's understand really how bad this is going to get, you know. So I really hope that the French will not rally behind Macron for this ridiculous efforts and war effort. You know, we should be looking at effort towards peace and not war. So I don't think there's going to be much traction coming from France, Patrick.
And I think we can all agree, Freddie, I'm Basil, I won't speak for you guys, but when it comes to the Middle East, the tail that wags the dog being the United States, the tail that wags the dog is normally Israel. Okay. I mean, that's not a big stretch. We all understand that's pretty much fact. And it's been like that for a long time. But in Europe, the tail that wags the dog, and what do you think about this, Freddie? The British always managed to stay slightly off stage, but yet they are absolutely, in my opinion, manipulating the situation politically through NATO, through their little games with Washington. I just seen very conveniently they managed to stay in the background. But I've always said, Freddie, I don't know if you agree or not, but Britain's the brains, America's the muscle. Think of the, you know, the nightclub owner, the City of London, and then the bouncer firm is a USA in the Pentagon. What do you think about this? Because a lot of people don't really acknowledge Britain's role in all this.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, they bring a huge knowledge and expertise in strategic warfare, and especially this kind of proxy war. I think they've come really to master it, and they've become master at it. This is the inheritance of a past of conquering different part of the world and getting all this know-how and this expertise, and then the counterintelligence from Britain is better to none, you know. So they do get first-hand information, whether it's from Russia or from Ukraine. They are capable to use, obviously, the entire network of intelligence that the United States provide as well. So if you have good counterintelligence, you got good ground intelligence, and then you obviously have these interoperabilities on the ground. I mean, you put all the changes on your side, but yet again, it goes down, this kind of war, it goes down to how many men you have on the ground. If you're below, 200,000 people, then you're exposed, especially with an army like the Russian army, which is extremely well equipped, and that has this capability to advance, to retreat, according to their plan. And they have safe zone. They really know what they're doing, So there's always bad decisions that are made, on the ground. And, there's a lot of politics as well going on within the army, whether it's Russian or Ukrainian. So that's a factor that affects everybody. But UK knows that, and UK knows that, at the end of the day, this is a war that was decided that's going to last a very, very long time, or perhaps even as long as possible, to serve the interests of the people financing this war. But UK is definitely more than a co-belligerent. I think it is the real strategic partner of Ukraine in that instance. They are real, the military strategy behind the Ukraine war effort.
No, absolutely, absolutely. Let me ask both of you a sort of question on a metaphor. I'll start with Basil. Think about Zelensky for a minute, okay?
I'd rather not.
I know. So 3 years ago, 3 years ago, he, or 4 years ago, he was dropping his trousers on stage and playing the piano with his family jewels, okay? So he's a vaudeville sitcom comedian in a European backwater media market, Ukraine. Mm. And then suddenly he becomes president during the most crucial time in the country's history and a bloody civil war going on in the East. Okay. What would the equivalent be of that type of a comedian character if the same thing happened in Britain to the point where people say, that's just ridiculous. That would show how cynical the public had become to elect the emperor with no clothes. Who would be the equivalent to Zelensky in Britain?
Somebody like Julian Clary, possibly.
Oh, my God.
Becoming prime minister, well, you know, I don't know. Do you know who he is, Freddie?
No, I just know, but I've seen the name, reading a couple of articles, and
is it trans?
But no,
is a transvestite. Is a transvestite comedian.
Yeah, that's what I think.
So Julian Clary as prime minister during a civil war, in a geopolitical crisis. What would that say about the British public at that point, that they'd had enough and they just lost faith in politics?
We lost all connection with reality.
Oh, Jesus. So that's what's happened in Ukraine. That's what I'm arguing. And people have elevated Zelensky because of the T-shirt and the sweatshirt and the whole stage managed thing. Think that he is just like the Eastern European version of George Washington.
Yeah, I'm not familiar. I know we have a lot of Australian users. I'm not familiar with contemporary Australian comedians, but Rolf Harris would be a better candidate for Prime Minister of Australia in this situation than Zelensky is for Ukraine.
A younger Rolf yes. Harris. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and someone like Paul Hogan is eminently more qualified and saner than Zelensky.
But on a comedian side, someone did like really trash, Euro trash kind of stand-up.
Well, I suppose I would say Barry Humphries, but
Barry Humphries.
He's highly intelligent.
Yeah, so that's not a good one,
is it? It's not a good one.
No. Not even Ricky Gervais. He's too smart.
Much too clever.
So on the French side, Freddie, would it be an Antoine de Kooning or something like this? Or who would be the French comedian equivalent of Zelensky if this situation played out in France, that to the point where it'd be so ridiculous that you'd think people just gave up on politics and faith in the whole government system, that they elected blank? Who would that be?
Well, that's a tough question, you know, because obviously it doesn't require to be funny, so that's going to put a lot of people on the list.
It just requires to be vulgar.
Exactly. So I'm looking on the vulgar things, which obviously I'm not very much, into. And, I don't watch French television whatsoever.
I know, but you
so
used to, right?
Me, like, it would be an oldie. An oldie. I don't know. It could be who could play the role. I mean, that bad. That's where the problem is. So bad, we need to find a Gillian pie face, kind of guy. So that's not going to be easy. Who could be Gillian Pieface in France? that's how I can get it. I think perhaps that's not easy because he has to be a bit of a queer as well. I mean, excuse my French, but it's a lot of qualification. I'm going to give you the thought. I'll probably give it to you next time around. I'll find you the proper guy with a picture as well, because you need a picture with that.
But you get the general idea, right? It's at that point. Like, imagine France was in the middle of fighting over a whole region. There was a violent civil war. The economy was in free fall. There was just a coup d'etat in Paris, and all of a sudden there's an election, and then America is backing some clown, and the people back him, and they elect him, and then he's quickly overnight turned into this politician figure as an actor. I mean, it is kind of a ridiculous scenario, isn't it, Freddie? It wouldn't be acceptable in the West, but we think it's absolutely. Most Westerners will think it's perfectly plausible for Ukraine. Isn't it weird how people project the legitimacy of something crazy like that because it's in Ukraine? Is it because they don't have respect for Ukrainians in general? I think there's a little bit of that going on. It's this kind of high-minded Western thing. Well, of course, an actor can be president in that country, a clown. Could be present, but not in our country. No, that's not going to be acceptable. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I was thinking about the actors. I think the Jamel Debbouze will be probably on top of my list. I think he ticks a lot of boxes. So Jamel Debbouze,
Jamel Debbouze for president.
for president of Ukraine. If we had to put a French actor, I think he'll fit. He's a bit small and he has a tendency to look ridiculous, you know, so, and really to talk a lot of nonsense as well. So, and he's very close to, you know, to the political side that, you know, that unfortunately I have no respect for. So that's where I will go, you know, no Gérard Depardieu, no Alain Delon, not this kind of, you know, I think he fits right in, you know. It's part of the, what we call in France the rectum club, you know. So I think that's really qualified, you know. That's our best.
Be careful, Freddie. This is a family show. This is a family program.
Exactly. That's all I'm going to say. I'm going to close it here.
He meant rectum, as in you wrecked them. Wrecked, yes. Like wrecked. Not W-R-E- what you, not what you think it is. Yeah,
K-E-D.
W-W-R-E-C-K-E-D. Yeah,
they call it the old thing. I.
Okay, all right. You guys are
don't get me started.
You guys are so you guys are so naughty. It's unbelievable. Gosh. Unbelievable, unsupervised.
It's a Freemasonic expression, you know. That's how.
He's just digging that hole even deeper. He's digging that hole even deeper. So imagine Jamel Debbouze, suddenly wearing army fatigues and a green military T-shirt, and addressing the country and the world every day in some like little camp costume like that, playing soldier. How silly would it be?
Look, I think he'll do great. He'll do great, definitely, absolutely, especially like with this military kind of a outfit, probably a tight, something a little bit tight, you know, trousers. It's all about stage presence, you know, so he'll fill the room for sure.
So, and for the British equivalent, fatigues, green T-shirt.
Well, Clary would camp it up, wouldn't he? You know,
Clary.
For the max, you know.
What about the guy with the talk show, Graham Norton?
Prime Minister. Another sort of candidate, yeah.
Green T-shirt. He could rock a tight T-shirt, couldn't he?
Yeah.
Old Graham Norton. So imagine Graham Norton becomes president or prime minister and the country's going to war. And the America and everybody's bigging him up as the next Churchill. I mean, that's the level that it's actually at with Zelensky, but most people in the West can't see it because they've just been bludgeoned with propaganda on this. Look, we're going to break real quick with the station here. We're going to come back and we're going to get into the story that Freddie's brought. But I'm here in studio with Basil Valentine on the line, Freddie Ponton, independent journalist from France. You're listening to TNT, Today's News Talk. We'll be right back after these messages.
With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
Don't miss the forest for the trees. The real story today isn't whether Alec Baldwin's Spanish wife, Elaria, is actually from Spain. Of course she isn't. She's Hillary Lynn Hardway Thomas from Weston, Massachusetts. She's as American as Alec is. And the real story of the day isn't whether Damar Hamlin was really at the Bills game. It was probably a body double. Maybe it wasn't. Who knows? Who cares? The real story of the day isn't even that Mike Pence rushed to Joe Biden's rescue in the document scandal by conveniently finding some classified documents in his own house. Funny that he didn't rush to President Trump's defense, finding documents in his own house. No, the real story of the day is the absolute clown world that we're told to believe in, that anybody with half an ounce of common sense knows is completely false. But that's the Democrat Party today. Up is down, left is right, and right is wrong. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
Tom has been a teacher for over 40 years. One day, I think one of the students had asked the question and he didn't remember the answer. And I also noticed that he was letting his class out earlier than they were supposed to let out. I was really starting to worry.
Levi and I talked about how it would change our lives, but he was there beside me.
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. Visit alz.org/ourstories to learn more. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
With a compelling perspective on global politics, this is the Patrick Henningsen Show on TNT Radio.
All right, folks, welcome back. Welcome back to this live broadcast. We're in the first hour here. I'm joined in studio with Basil Valentine, but also on the line from France, independent French researcher, journalist. His name's Freddie Ponton. And Freddie, I'm just going to kick this off with the CEO of the great pharmaceutical firm known as Pfizer. His name's Albert Bourla. And he is at Davos. He's talking about moving at the speed of science. And it's gone beyond just, you know, profits, as they say. Most people look at pharma and say, oh, they're doing it for profit. It's more than profit now, isn't it?
Oh, yes. If it was about profit, we would have seen a different strategy. You know, it would have been so much easier for them to use a placebo, safe and you know, safety and efficacy would have not been any problem, no challenge with regards to any side effect. You know, so if you just want to make money, you would have just come up with some kind of a placebo and you would have made billions. Nobody would have seen anything. Because, you know, as long as you know the FDA and the regulators are on board, that's all you need, you know. Then when you get the authorization to go to market, it's over. You know, the product will be circulated. Everybody within the know will know that there's no danger, there's no side effects. So that's when you want to make money. You sell wind, you sell sand in the Middle East, or you're going to be sending basically placebo to people in good health, you know. So that's how you make money. But that's not what they did, because a lot of people are injured. A lot of people died following this vaccination. So clearly it shows that Pfizer is actually not in control whatsoever. They're just basically the front of the house. They are the name, the established name, like, you know, other companies are, the Sanofis of the world and so on. And they were used because of their kind of reputation as big pharma and trusted kind of name, if you will. So this had to come from them. But we know who's calling the shot, and it's definitely not Pfizer. And we can talk about that, of course.
Yeah. So who tell us again, we're obviously reiterating previous discussion, but I think it's important to go over those past steps very quickly and then forward again. So who is in charge, Freddie?
Well, it's obviously a mix of three different kind of group of people and program, if you will, that were put in charge of handling the response to the COVID-19. So pretty much everything that we need to know originated in the United States. There is a little bit of competence in China and Europe, but really the most of the work as far as investigative work was done in the United States, because the decision came from the U.S. Department of Defense and the National Security Council. So the NSC is in charge of the COVID policies in the United States, which means that you're going to have a mix of the intelligence community with the militaries working together to control not only the R&D, but also the deployments of these vaccines, which are never called vaccines in the realm of the U.S. Department of Defense. They have called countermeasures. So we're talking about the R&D and manufacturers of countermeasures, and then the logistic associated to it in the United States and abroad. So when you understand that, you can see that obviously there's going to be some kind of red tape as far as the FDA remaining independent, and that was very difficult in the case of an emergency use authorization, because the EUA, the emergency use authorizations, basically throw the ball on the side of the U.S. Department of Defense and the intelligence community, and they're running the show. They are the executives of these programs, not the FDA, not the HHS. The HHS only act as an advisor to the response for COVID. But the big shots are taken by the NSC and the US DOD. So that's why when Pfizer talk, I'm not listening any longer, because I know it doesn't matter. This guy is a veterinarian. It's not, you know, someone that I want to listen to when I'm talking about biomanufacturing, or when I want to talk about safety and efficacy. You know, I want to talk to someone that has actually this real regulatory background knowledge and understanding what these countermeasures are all about, you know, and that's, I think, what we're going to discuss next. You know, what are these countermeasures? What are we talking about here, Patrick?
I think that's a really important point there that you just brought up that people need to understand is that if, take the war on terror, for instance, there's all sorts of security protocols. There's the Patriot Act in the United States. There's agreements between countries. And this is into the realm of, you know, national security or a war on terror. It's all non-negotiable. And if you look, Freddie, you know, 9/11 was 20 plus years ago. And, you know, we have to empty out the little bottles of lotion and take the little toothpaste out, put it in a plastic bag, take our shoes off, walk through a 360-degree millimeter microwave body scanner. There's all of these protocols because everyone's a potential terrorist. So they have to go through all these rigorous steps. And there's a whole industry around all of these protocols. It's a huge global industry that sprouted out of 9/11 and gradually built up, and has stayed, even though radical Islamic terror and airplanes, for instance, is not widely regarded as a major threat. But the system changes because these are agreements between countries, between governments and departments of homeland security and departments of defense and all the rest of it, counterterrorism measures. So it's not going anywhere, even though the quote threat is gone. Is that the same thing that's happening here with the deployment of the vaccines, for instance, to counter this alleged, novel deadly virus that we're told is ravaging the planet?
Yes, it's literally a response to a threat. So we're not talking anymore about public health. There's nothing in terms of public health that is really taking into consideration when you're stockpiling or you're developing new countermeasures. Countermeasures have their own regulations, they have their own systems, they have their own kind of an understanding and framework, if you will. So all it takes really for people is to dig into the countermeasure details, if you will, really looking at how they are manufactured, who's responsible to manufacture them, how safe, how efficient, what's the role of the FDA, and understanding what are the possibility, the criminal possibilities and involvements of the pharmaceutical industry and the pharmaceutical companies that got involved with the U.S. Department of Defense, NHSS, to make them available to the public. So when you really, the old investigation is about studying the context, the legal framework, and then the capabilities and the ability for this organization to act in a criminal fashion, but within a legal framework. And that's really what's really new about this COVID-19. It's more and more we're realizing that these people have been working and tweaking regulations and laws over the last past 20 years to arrive to the point that a criminal act could be legal. And that's really the best way I can summarize, if you will, my understanding of what I'm looking at the moment. You see, when we talk about this COVID-19 vaccine, those that have been deployed around the world by Pfizer, Moderna, and so on, these are what we call covered countermeasures. And these covered countermeasures are referred to as vaccine, medication, device. They can be a different item used to prevent or to diagnose or to treat a public health emergency or security threat. None of it is really related to health emergency here, because we're going to see that the countermeasures that the U.S. Department of Defense has chosen were the security countermeasures, which mean they respond to a CBRN threat, which is chemical, biological, radiological, and nuclear threats. Which involve a complete different actions on the federal level and different reaction actually on the federal level, One being the cog, the continuity of government. You know, you need to make sure the government is going to be able, the agency is going to be able to function, going to be able to be operational, even in the case of a national threat, a national security threat. And then the commands and the directives and the emergency plans, you know, falls into place. You would expect to see someone that has a lot of experience in handling public health issues be in charge on the operational side of Warp Speed. But when you look at the documents, you can see that FEMA is in charge of the operational aspect of the response. FEMA has absolutely no experience in public health emergency. So why would they be kind of put in charge, if you will, of the operation for the response on the COVID-19 when they have no expertise in public health? So we can clearly see that this is completely a military countermeasures. This is a military program, and so are the products that has been deployed by these people.
Mm-hmm. And Donald Trump made a big deal about, he was very much gung-ho. I'm consulting with the generals, where the Pentagon is going to help us to fight this pandemic, and we've just had a meeting with the Joint Chiefs. And at the time, everybody thought that was just typical Trump bluster, you know, talking about the generals. He liked to align himself with the military, and he's always had great, you know, admiration for the military, et cetera. I think he went to military academy when he was young as well. But most people wrote that off, Freddie, at the time as just Trump being Trump. But there was actually more to that. And now we understand, because of new information that's available, to join the dots on this. We've got 2 minutes left for the top of the hour, but I'll give you the floor to close this out, Freddie.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for that, Patrick. Well, yes, I think the first speech, the launch of Operation Warp Speed by Donald Trump and then the rest of the team, of course, was very important. And everybody should listen again to that. I'm going to write an article about this to explain a little bit the importance of what he says during this inauguration speech for the Operation Warp Speed. And you're going to see who are the key people very quickly, because he announces who are the key people. You're going to see the important role of someone like Deborah Birx, you know, actually I should call her Colonel. She's a Colonel, Colonel Deborah Birx, and the importance she has. We're going to see the role of the White House, coronavirus task, the Unified Coordination Group, the Operation Warp Speed, and then the Physician Advisory Group with the FDA. And then really look at who's doing what, who has authority, who doesn't, and then understanding what Trump was trying to tell. You know, he was talking about actually natural immunity during his speech and how important that is, you know, to fight against this virus and only have a targeted, basically, applications of these countermeasures with the older population, 65, 75. It's all in his speech, you know, he's not hiding it. And he's obviously definitely not pro-mandate, but he's definitely involved with the pharmaceutical and to this entire plan and this COVID-19. So there is an awareness.